You are listening to the Willpower Podcast. Welcome to the show. I am Will Holdren, and I talk with some of the most influential CEOs, entrepreneurial leaders, and thought leaders to try and reveal the secrets that has led to their success. I believe that with the right knowledge and mindset, you can do anything you set your mind to. So if you want to learn how to change your life for the better, if you want to learn how millionaires actually became wealthy, or if you want to develop and start your own business from the ground up with the right knowledge to help you, then you are in the right place because this is the Willpower Podcast. I cannot wait to introduce you to today's guest, but first, if you have enjoyed an episode, then please, please open up Apple Podcasts and hit that subscribe button. And if you think we deserve it, scroll to the bottom, select write a review, and leave us a 5-star rating with a review that states where you are from and one aspect of the show that you love. Once you do that, send me a screenshot and I will feature you on a future show and shout you out on my Instagram that has over 10,000 followers. Now let's get to the show with our newest guest. Hey, no way that we go is a one-way street. Nothing that we love is a one-day key. And if we gon' do it, we gon' do this now. And if we say we gonna, we gon' hold this down. How's it going, everyone? My name is Will Holdren, and I am the host of the Willpower Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, and her name is Tina Call. And Tina is actually a TEDx speaker. And on top of that, she has helped over 780 realtors on her international EXP team. So it was an absolute honor to have her on here today. So Tina, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Of course, my pleasure. I'm super excited for this as well. And so to kind of start off, I kind of want to go into your childhood a little bit. So can you kind of talk about your childhood, what it was like, and how it kind of turned you into who you are today?
Oh my goodness. How long do we have, Will? Yeah. So, I mean, my childhood. So have you watched the movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
I have not.
Just watch that movie. That's my childhood. So if you haven't watched it, I grew up in a Greek Italian family. My parents were literally right off the boat and spoke broken English. So I grew up in a family where, education was not as important as survival. They didn't have a lot of money, so they were just trying to make ends meet and keep food on the table. So I grew up in an environment where I was always looking outside going, wow, look at those people. They have this, we don't have this. So I came from a mindset of lack and disappointment, I would say. Had food on the table, always had clothing on my back, felt safe, but I couldn't help but look at others and feel like we were less than. And so my whole childhood, I felt less than. And even in early education in school, I wasn't the best student. And so when, your elementary school is putting grades on everybody's papers, you kind of leave that educational system also feeling less than because you didn't get the best grades. So I came into my adulthood feeling a little bit average.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting childhood. And so I'm kind of curious because your parents, like you said, came over on a boat to the U.S. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious, like, what was their kind of vision of the American dream? And what was your vision of the American dream when you were growing up? You had that mindset of like a less than kind of mindset.
You know, I think they always wanted more. I mean, they were entrepreneurs. They came over, my mother from Italy with her 7 siblings. My father came as one of the first people from his family. They were looking to be successful because in Greece at the time, there were wars and things weren't going right. And so they always hoped to come to America and build big successful businesses. And so my dad was a serial entrepreneur. The thing I learned from him was that it's normal to just start a business and watch it fail. And then you just start another business and you watch it fail and you just keep doing that. And so, for me to become an entrepreneur, it was sort of like, oh, this is what we do. It wasn't scary. I think for most people, they go to school, they go to college, they learn how to become employees. And some of them learn how to become really high paid employees, CEOs, but they're still employees. And so I think that's the educational system in our world. It teaches you how to go get employed. For me, I wasn't going to go spend money in college because I had to pay for it myself. And I thought, well, I'm average. So I'm going to pay all this money to a college so they can confirm that I'm average again. And I can fail their tests and not do well. So I skipped that route and I just decided to become an entrepreneur.
Wow. I love that. So after high school, you had the entrepreneurial mindset, you just became an entrepreneur right off the bat. So what was your first entrepreneurial activity? Was it real estate right away or were you doing other things before real estate?
No. So I was a nanny first. And at the time, again, this was 20, 5 years ago, I was getting paid $800 a week cash to nanny. So that was a lot of money back then, like 8 years old. So I figured out, and what was great though for that experience is I was working for rich families, for wealthy, affluent families. So I got to see, you know, Richard, the first guy I worked with, he would get picked up by a driver and he would sit in the back seat. And I'd be like, that is so cool. You know, so at an early age, thank goodness, being a nanny for affluent families actually taught me that, okay, so these are what the successful people's lives look like. They go on fancy vacations, they travel, they have high paying jobs. So that's kind of where I started. So nanny, and then I was, I worked for a dental office that was terrible. I got fired from every single job since, from being a nanny, every single job I got fired because I kind of tried to create my own rules. And then finally, when my husband and I, we met at 16. So he was one good thing that came out of high school, met him at 16, 17. He bought his first house at 20. And so in that process, we met a real estate agent and she basically kind of encouraged me to come into the real estate game. And she's like, you'd be great at this. You know, you were really great to work with. Go get your real estate license. And I was like, oh shit, I have to take a test. Oh, never gonna pass. But I did. I passed on the first try and the rest is history. I've been a real estate agent from 23 to 43, now 20 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's impressive. I also just got my license too about 2 weeks ago. So I'm pretty like brand new in the real estate side.
Yay, good for you.
Like, the thing I love about the real estate test, you can take as many times as you want to. It doesn't matter how many times you fail.
You know, what's funny, I'll tell you a little story about that. I was at a conference speaking and there was a girl on stage and she took her real estate exam 16 times and her family basically told her, give up, what's the point? Everybody in the industry said, this is not gonna work for you. Her first year in real estate, she's made $500,000 to date.
Oh my gosh.
But imagine if she would have gave up at the 15th time. Right. So if you really want something in your life, you better just stick to it.
Persistence is key. 100%. Yes. So throughout your life story, I'm kind of interested, at what point did you kind of change your mindset from that less than mindset, like okay, like I came in a pool where I don't have the things I need to become successful, to okay, I can actually become a super successful doing what I love to do. Like, at what point did that happen? Was it like, was that when you were nannying, or at what point?
No. Nannying gave me like the, you know, it kind of, I downloaded in my brain, like, wow, this is what the rich live like, you know, and it was kind of cool. They'd have packages coming to their doors. They could buy whatever they want. I was like, that's kind of nice. But I still didn't have the belief because I didn't have the vehicle. Once I had the vehicle, so it was real estate first, you know, my first year in real estate, I did really well. But proximity is power, right? And so the agents that were around me in my office, you know, they sold about 25, 30 homes a year at the time. And I became the equivalent of what success was in that office. So there was no top producer in my office. So I literally morphed off them and I was making 100 to 150 grand a year, which to my family, I was rich. That was the cat's meow. I mean, we weren't making a ton of money. So I stayed at that level for 7 years, Will. And so what happened though, was I was exposed to a different group of people in an organization, a coaching organization. I met a lady that was crushing it in real estate, making $800,000 a year. Well, what happens when you see some information and your mind expands, it never goes back. So when I was exposed to all of these other people, these other multi-million dollar producing agent, I was like, well, shoot, if they can do it, I surely can do it because I know how to sell real estate. I just needed the information. And so I immediately joined that coaching organization, you know, back 12, 13 years ago. And it changed the trajectory of my business. So it gave me the courage to build a business that was very duplicatable. And I went in 4 years, 5 years, from making $150,000 to making my first million in 5 years after joining that organization.
That's impressive. And all it took was just seeing that one person actually doing it. And then that power of belief resonated in your mind. And then you could kind of replicate what she was already doing. And so that brings up a pretty interesting concept. So do you think that most people kind of lack that vision because they never really have the information needed to like see other people go out there and do it? Would you say that's the main reason of why people aren't able to excel past like what they're capable of?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me, it's exposure, right? So now I try to be the dumbest person in the room all the time. You know, I want to be dumb. Before I was like, I don't want to feel dumb. Now I'm like, yes, I want to feel dumb. So imagine you put yourself in a room back then. I made 150 grand. I put myself in a room of people making $1 million plus. Now my mind has expanded to the possibility is there. So if I bet on myself, I knew I could take the action. I'm a gritty, hardworking person. So I knew I would take the action. I wasn't afraid of that, but I needed the exposure. Now in my business, you know, 20 years later, I put myself in rooms where people are worth $100 million, $150 million. So that way I could go, okay, if they're worth $150 million, $1 billion, right? I mean, I was just in a room with Tony Robbins. I spoke on the same stage as Tony Robbins. The man has 181 different businesses. That will expand your mind. So my little net worth, I wanted to be worth $10 million one day, which I'm getting close to, you know, being worth that. That's minuscule, right? It's not big enough, because the more that you tap into your potential, I think everybody has so much untapped potential. The biggest risk in life is not pushing yourself to open up that potential. And I don't want to be an 80-year-old woman sitting on a bench going, man, I left so much potential on the table. Like, that's my biggest fear, is the potential has been left. So you have to push yourself to be in different rooms, and your mindset will expand as you grow and you're around those people.
Yeah, I really love that concept, the untapped potential. I know Gary Vee talked about that too before. He's like, if you were ever want to go to a place like where dreams are just dead, go to a nursing home and you can see all these people
who
really acted on their dreams or never fulfilled like their true potential, just like you're talking about that.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Or some people, you know, I have lots of people, you know, friends or family, they're so afraid of their own shadow. It's like I tell them, you know, dig a hole, get in and wait, because your life is pretty much over, right? If you're not really, people want progress. They want progress in their life to feel like they're moving forward, and progress equals happiness. And so if you're not progressing as a human, you feel stagnant and helpless and a lot of times unhappy. So I think a lot of people are stuck in that mode where they can't get out of it. But if you're a seeker of information, you'll always find people that are doing more than you. And then that will inspire you to take little steps past that fear that's sitting on your shoulder, that little gremlin called fear.
Yep, absolutely. And like, in my opinion, I feel like people kind of die twice. One, once they give up their dreams, like usually like early 20s, something like that. You know what I mean? The second, when they actually die in like 80s or something like that. So it's super sad to see, but people like you do break away and do actually follow their dreams and do like overcome fear and stuff like that. So that's super powerful to see.
Yeah.
So kind of jumping back into your story. So when your first year as a real estate agent, you were making 150, over 100 grand a year, right? Your first year?
No, not my first year. So my first year, I mean, I don't even remember exactly what it was, but I had enough friends and family and I was willing to door knock. I was door knocking for sale by owners. My first three listings were for sale by owner door knocks. So I was okay to take the action. I think I was rookie of the year. You know, I'd sold a good amount of homes and I wanted to get out of the pit. They had this little area called the pit for the newbies. And I was like, I don't want to be in the pit. So I was very aggressive in my first year. So first couple few years was great. I probably made 100 grand by my second year in real estate. I think it was like 80 the first year and then 100 and it grew from there, but it peaked. I hit a ceiling at 150 grand because that was all that everybody was making around me. And so I was just the equivalent of what they were making.
Gotcha. And were you with eXp at the beginning of your career, or were you a different brokerage?
No. I was with a boutique firm up in Michigan. GMAC was the name of it. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, so you're making close to 150 grand your second year. I mean, that's pretty impressive. So like, obviously real estate game, not easy. A lot of agents that come into it, a lot of agents that fail. So I'm kind of curious, like, what were you doing the first couple of years that were separating you and the agents that kind of don't make it? Like, what are some of the different habits that you were doing?
So I was reading a lot, you know, I was reading books. I would devour every single book I could possibly find about real estate. I was a seeker. I'm still a seeker today. I wanted to learn all the information because there is so much power packed in somebody's book, somebody's story. So door knocking and for sale by owners became my bread and butter. And I would literally go out to those people and try to convince them to list with me. And so I knew that they would list with the first agent that basically had enough confidence to get in their way. And so that was it. I took action. I sought out whatever I could on the internet and I wasn't afraid to go get rejected. So I think a lot of us don't like rejection, but the biggest, if you watch the most successful people in life, they have mastered the power of getting over rejection quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is so crucial to really success in any industry that you want to go into. Like, you got to be able to take that rejection, overcome that fear,
exactly,
and just make it happen. So that's super cool. Exactly. And so you said that you were capped for about like 7 years because people around you were kind of making the same amount of money like year after year after year. And then did you switch brokerages to that other brokers that are making like $1 million?
No. So funny story, it was 2006. The market was actually crashing in Michigan well before the 2008 crash. So we started to see that shift. And my income went from 150,000 to 40. And I was like, well, this is not fun anymore. I had a new baby. I was making 40 grand. We had overpaid for a house and we were basically over leveraged and we didn't have enough money to make the payment on the house that we bought because I bought in equivalent to what I was earning. And when that earning went from 150 to 40, it was like, oh shit, I can't afford this house anymore. I have to move. And so I was actually going to deviate into, or move into listing, what was it called? All in a Day Design. It was an interior design company. And so in that moment of transitioning out of real estate into interior design, that's when I met that agent that was earning $1 million. That's where I met the coach. That's where I jumped into a coaching company and my income went back. What happened though, Will, was we were still at that same firm. But the fact that my coach and my new mentor allowed me to think bigger, they said, what would be a big dream for you? I said, well, to get out of Michigan because it's freaking cold here. So I don't want to live in Michigan anymore where the wind hurts my face. I want to live somewhere where people are warm and happy. So we ended up moving with our new skills, right? Our new coaching, our new skills, our new mindset, thinking bigger. We moved to Raleigh, North Carolina, didn't know a soul. And when we landed here, we ended up going to a Remax brokerage. And I remember walking in and I said, I want the biggest office that you have because I had a little teeny tiny office at that firm in Michigan. And he said, you just got here and the market's crashing. This was 2009. I said, yeah, but I'm going to make it happen. I said, I want the biggest office you have. And they gave me a corner office. And I remember it was $1,000 a month. And my husband's like, what are you doing? I said, well, you gotta go big or go home, right? So we came with, I think, $80,000 in our pocket. That was our net worth back in 2009. And we got down to about 10 grand in the bank. And my husband said, if you don't sell homes faster, we're going to be needing to go back to Michigan. And that's all I needed to hear. And I basically got on the phones. I called expireds for sale by owners. And I literally lit the world on fire that next 6 month period. We sold 35 homes. We made 200 grand that next 12 month period. And the rest is history. So.
Gosh, that's a very impressive story.
Yeah.
I love the resilience that you kind of showed throughout the whole journey. And so I'm kind of curious because obviously you were kind of on the lower end of things. You had $10,000 left in your account. You had to start selling houses faster. Things were not looking good. Recession's hitting, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But then you have like a sense of urgency. Your husband calls you and then you kind of like take massive action, all out massive action that actually changes your whole business. And so I'm kind of curious, like, how do people kind of generate that sense of urgency before it's actually needed? You know what I mean? So people don't have to be down that bad before they sense that, you know?
You know, I think that there has to be pain. And when you look at people that are comfortable, they're complacent, right? They have a comfortable life. They have a comfortable home. They comfortable bills. They make comfortable money. So if you're comfortable, why would you ever want to be uncomfortable? Unless somebody was forcing you. Think about your parents growing up. Clean your room, Will. Clean your room, Will. I don't feel like it. Okay, well, if you don't feel like it, you're not going to do anything. So we don't have adults. As adults, I don't have another adult coming to me and saying, make your calls, make your prospecting calls today or you're going to be broke. You know, I don't have my mother, my father in my ear forcing me to do things. So to be uncomfortable, I think when you look at a lot of success stories, there was some moment that you hit a wall and you have to burn the boats and you have to have no other options around. And that's going to force you into the most uncomfortable thing, which for salespeople is getting rejected in a massive way, right? And so I had to spend 6 hours a day on the phones getting rejected massively to have success. And if you ask a real estate agent that's making 150, 200 grand a year that's comfortable, hey, do you want to lock yourself in a room for 6 hours a day having people hang up on you and call you names? And no, I don't want to do that. I don't need to do that. So I'm not going to do that. You can go earn $1 million doing that. I'm comfortable over here. They have to want a burning desire to make either the money or have the freedom. For me, it was having financial freedom was everything. And making $1 million on my tax return, even though it was gross, right? It wasn't net profit. It was gross profit. I wanted to make that happen. So there was no turning back. We had to burn the boats.
Right. Yeah, this is super interesting to me. And this kind of goes back to like success in general. Like if you look at a lot of success journeys, a lot of people when they were coming up were kind of the broke people, the people that didn't have a great childhood, the people that were uncomfortable kind of coming up. And it's like the same thing you're talking about. Like you got to be uncomfortable and then you're going to see that huge change eventually because you have that urgency behind you. But people that are comfortable, like people that are like more middle class kind of growing, you don't see those success stories as much, even though it's should be easier for them technically because they have more resources.
Right.
But they never actually do anything because they're at that comfortable stage. So exactly. It's always an interesting topic. And I'm kind of curious, do you think that if people are kind of like that middle group that kind of has like a comfortable situation growing up, do you think it's inevitable for them to kind of stay at that level, or do you think they can still reach that sense of urgency even though it's not needed and they're not ever uncomfortable?
I mean, I'm sure that there are people that lived a middle-class life or a very affluent life. You know, I do know some affluent people that had everything kind of handed to them. And when I say handed to them, you know, their family had money and they bought nice cars that are still successful, but there's something about not having enough, you know, not feeling like your family life was what you wanted it to be and making a conscious change to say, you know what, I was beaten as a child. I'm not going to do that as a parent, right? Making a conscious effort to say, my dad woke every time he got in trouble, he got whipped by his father or yelled at, or his father would hit his mother. And then my dad didn't hit my mother. And then I'm not going to be in an abusive relationship, even by somebody verbally abusing me. There's levels that we have to consciously make decisions to say, I'm going to stop that. And I'm going to start something different. I'm going to change the trajectory of my life because I want that. Somebody has to have a want to change and then they can go after it. But if you're comfortable and you come from a middle-class life and you feel like I'm just going to go get a job and live this comfortable life and I don't need money, I think people have a negative concept of money, right? Think of money is the root of all evil. Okay, well, that's what you're taught in church sometimes. Like, then, you know, all you do is go to work and give money to the church and it's the root of all evil. So I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to explore it. I'm definitely not going to flaunt it if I have it. So it is an interesting psychological mindset, I think, that a lot of people have that stops them regardless of, you know, what their background is.
Yeah, I'm glad you really brought that up because it really is just a mental decision. Like you can use anything as leverage to make yourself uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Like even if I'm middle class, I can look at someone that's upper class and like, dang, I want that. I can make myself uncomfortable until I
get till I get that. Yeah. I'm very, you know, my son is growing up in a very affluent family, right? He's 16 years old. When I ask my son, what do you want for Christmas? I don't get a list. He'll go, whatever you think, mom. Like he is such a humble, he doesn't need anything. Think about his life. But I started to think about that. I'm like, is he going to be, is it going to be a detriment to him because he's had everything in his life comfortably? Or is he going to grow up with an abundance mindset because he has a mom and a dad that are like, you can do anything you want. Literally put your mind to it. Think about money. I want him to have a rental property. The minute that he turns 18, he's getting his license. He's coming to EXP. He's going to learn how to have relationships. And he is going to have such a different education, a life education. I still want him to go to school and get a business degree or something. But he, in the interim, he is going to learn how to have a kick-ass business, whether he likes it or not, so he can have financial freedom in his life. So he will learn the vehicles of money and how it operates. So I don't know. I hope that he'll become uber successful. But you asked me as a child what I wanted for Christmas. I'd give you a list, right? I had so many things I wanted because I came from lack. He will come from abundance. It'll be interesting to see how his life transpires.
Well, I'm sure since you're his mom, everything will turn out.
No.
I kind of want to jump back into your story. So you were at Remax then, and then you started having that urgency, do a lot better, start making close to $1 million a year. So I'm kind of curious, like if you're doing so well at Remax, why did you decide to switch to EXP then later in your career?
So I didn't switch to EXP then. So what I did was I went from Remax and I was at a point in Remax where I had earned all the awards, lifetime achievement awards. And I started to, you know, pay the company $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year. And I was like, well, this is ridiculous. What am I getting in return? Loved my owner, you know, the Remax owner, but I wasn't getting enough back. I was always outsourcing my education. And so when I thought about scaling and building a team, I kept hitting a wall because I'm making $1 million a year, sure, but I'm the operator. I'm the gasoline in the engine. I'm selling 130 homes personally a year. That's no life because your whole life is service. And so becoming a business owner is where you can actually walk away from your business and your business is still operating and making money without you. That is a true business owner. And I wanted that. So I was looking at Keller Williams because I thought, oh, all those team leaders there, they look happy. I mean, they have teams, they're out of production. I think I'm going to go over there and learn that. And when I got to the other side and I jumped from Remax to Keller Williams, I realized that these team leaders were not happy because they were being taught to recruit to their teams. They would not be able to really pour into all their people and let them list homes and sell and become truly entrepreneurs, because then if you teach them way too much, they leave you. So now you're stuck with this hamster wheel of agents coming in and agents leaving you, and your agents turn into competitors. So that's not fun. So I thought, well, this is not working. There's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way. Then I discovered eXp and I thought, oh, this is a much better way. It's a global company, right? We're in 19 different countries. So it's very scalable. That was very important to me because Airbnb is the largest hotel chain in the world and they don't own one piece of brick and mortar, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, this is where the world is going. So I went to eXp because I knew I had to recruit to survive on my team. But when an agent decides to graduate from my team and leave, they're still in my financial alignment vehicle. I'm still their partner and I can still help them grow. And I can still encourage them to go build a business even bigger than me. So I loved that piece. I wanted a piece of ownership in my business and nobody ever gave me anything. But this little trophy, which is the only trophy I keep on my desk, right? I have three of these. Just by selling 27 homes a year, which, you know, we're going to end at 500 units hopefully this year. But just by an agent selling 27 homes, you get your entire cap back in stock. That stock has paid me over $600,000 in 28 months of money I never had before I came here and did my job, right? Nothing, no recruiting, nothing above and beyond, just doing my job has net me wealth building of $600,000 in incentives. So then I went to eXp in April 2019. And then I learned something which was beautiful, which was called leverage. Leverage is key. So I learned that in my past life at Keller Williams, I was a team leader of 12 agents, 12 people on my team, 8 agents, 4 admin staff. In my free time, Will, I was actually putting on the golf course. And that's where I was using my energy because I thought, okay, I made it. Here we are. I'm a team leader. I'm going to recruit agents. I have this team of 12. We're going to sell 300 homes this year. And that was where I was exerting my energy. Now at eXp, I've brought over 88 agents. It's actually more like 130, but I place other people on teams. But I brought over 88 people and it's turned into almost 800 agents. So now instead of golfing, I get to pour into agents and build their wealth building skills, build their real estate teams, really help agents kind of grow. And it's such an inspiring place to be. So I'm having more fun again.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about. I love what you said about the whole business thing too, because if you're working the whole time, then it's not really a business, it's really just another job. You're just getting paid differently. And with eXp, just so you're talking about, like, you don't have to be there eventually and you can still get paid the same amount of money. And that's a business. That's where you can just leave and still have that residual income coming in. So yeah. I joined eXp as well. So that's why I
figured that's why you were curious about it all. Yeah. That's awesome. Congratulations to have found this company at your age, at this, you know, this time in your life is pretty amazing. So congrats. Welcome to our company.
Yeah, appreciate it. And so you joined eXp in 2019. So you've only been in here for 2 years. You recruited 88 agents. So that's pretty impressive. So
yeah. Yeah, recruited it to like right around 120 people. So personally on my front line.
So like, what's your recruiting method to get agents in here?
I'm giving them value, you know, so they're coaching under me, they're training under me. We're having, you know, three times a week, we're having mastermind calls, you know, so we're all collaborating. So now we've created an environment of growth, an environment of inspiration. You know, people don't come to eXp because you just wave rev share and stock in their face. Some might. But it's not a get rich quick scheme. It's not a pyramid scheme. It's not what people tell us that it is. It's truly coming on board with 7 different individuals that are going to pour into your business. And so my business went from 72 million to 200 million in 2 years at eXp. And I hit a ceiling at that 70 million. I just couldn't bust through it. I didn't have any other methods. And so when you think about even my net on being an independent agent, making $1 million a year, my net was around 750,000 when I was doing all the work. Wow. Now I've built a real estate team and I've learned how to net you know, $1 million a year and I don't work at all, like as far as selling homes. So that's kind of fun, right? So it taught me that leverage. The other cool thing is though, the EXP team, you know, there's two reasons people don't come to EXP. One, somebody's explained it wrong to them and didn't inspire them into the company correctly. Or two, they just don't know how to do math, because math is compounding, right? It's, yes, it's just leverage, right? It's people, it's inspiring through people. So you bring people on to your organization, you teach them, you help them, you learn how to grow, and they go build their organizations. Now I have 800 agents. When those agents sell a home every single month, I get a referral fee from the company. That is huge. So this company, I'm 2 years in, I'm almost netting the same amount yearly in residual passive income that I am on my real estate team.
That's crazy.
And I have zero investment dollar wise every single month on my real estate team. I'm still spending 60 grand a month to run the team. So which one is better? If you can do math.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
The possibilities are actually crazy when you just zoom out and look at everything that could happen.
Yeah. Who is your sponsor?
So I actually interviewed a guy named Gusty Gulas. He runs like the biggest EXP brokerage in Alabama.
Okay. I don't know Gusty, but I'll have to meet him.
Yeah, you'll have to meet him. He's a cool dude. So before we run out of time, I have one more question for you. You're kind of looking at the future, like a couple of years from now, like what are some of your big goals that you want to get accomplished with your real estate team, personal, anything of that nature?
You know, for me, it's like I love the idea of inspiring people. You know, I have this acronym, you know, that I love to teach. You know, it's LIFE, right? Learn, implement, fail more than you succeed, and evolve. So I think if I look at my life, I'm constantly learning. I mean, constantly. I am watching podcasts and learning and reading books, and you're probably the same, right? You're just eating up information as fast as you can get it. Then you're implementing, right? You're implementing 20% of what you learn makes 80% of the result happen. 20% makes 80% of the result of your business happen. So you have to implement, you have to take imperfect action. People try to be perfect, they're broke. The perfect people are broke. If you look at them, they are so stifled by not taking action because they're not perfect. They don't know everything. I don't know shit and I take action. That's the reality, right? You got to take action. Then you fail. So when people fail, they just curl up and go, oh my God, I failed. Forget it. I'm never trying again. No, failure is where you learn. My dad failed in every freaking business he had till he was 70 years old. And he finally won, right? Look at the guy that started Kentucky Fried Chicken. He failed at every business, but 65 years old, he started freaking Kentucky Fried Chicken. Right? So you look at somebody like that and you fail often. Like you want to fail. So I seek failure. I think it's great. And then evolve. You always have to be evolving in your business. It is changing. When real estate agents are so stuck in their mindset of this is the way we've always done it, well, you're going to be left behind. Traditional real estate offices of the past, they have been around since 1908, doing it the same way even today. The world is changing. We have Amazon, we have Uber, we have Netflix, we have EXP Realty. It is changing. So I know their brokers and brokerages try to convince them that this is the bad thing, but I'm glad actually, and Will, I hope you take this. I'm so glad that people don't understand this model fast, because if they understood it as fast as I understood it, the minute I saw it, everybody would be here. There'd be no opportunity to help train and coach. So I think it's great. And EXP would implode. They couldn't even manage mass amount of people. We already have 4,000 agents coming every month. They can't handle any more than that. So that's actually good. We're actually growing at the right pace. So let the haters talk, let people say what they want to say, but we know the truth and we know how it's actually changing lives, because people cry on stage here. I haven't been to a RE/MAX conference or a Keller conference where people were crying on stage because of their life changing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, action takers get rewarded, and that's what we're doing. So that's
Absolutely.
So before we head off, is there anything else that you'd like to say? And if people want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
Well, we're everywhere. I mean, we're on Facebook. We have, my Facebook is not private. Call Group at Call Group on Instagram, and then YouTube. We're growing our YouTube channel. So we've got, I think, 5,000 or 6,000 subscribers there. So we're constantly changing and pouring into people's businesses so they can grow. And if you come from value, Will, people will follow. So I think that's the cool thing.
100%. All right, guys, there you have it. Tina Call, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Good to meet you. No way that we go is a one-way street.